So, hello everyone. It's a pleasure to introduce the seminar speaker today, Dr. Emery Bartos from University of Florida. Dr. Bartos received his PhD from Columbia University, where he subsequently remained as a lecturer and then a research scientist before joining the faculty at the University of Florida. He's brought in field of interest includes multi-messenger astrophysics, extreme cosmic events related to the formation and evolution of black holes. He's a member of the LIGO collaboration and the LISA consortium, and associate member of the IceCube collaboration. He also serves as an associate member of the Commission of Astroparticle Physics of the International Union of Pure and Applied Physics. Dr. Bartos was awarded the Sloan Research Fellowship in 2020 and the Excellence Award from the University of Florida in 2020. Today he's gonna talk about black hole assembly lines in AGN disks. Please take it away.
Thank you so much, ma'am, for the invitation. Thank you for being here. It's a very interesting topic and very interesting time for gravitational wave related events. Let me start with a little bit of introduction. Gravitational wave detections or gravitational wave astrophysics started about 6 years ago. So this is a relatively new field, but it started pretty quickly. We had the first discovery within hours of turning the detector on. And there's a lot of interesting science in these discoveries. For example, when we look at the first discovery, two colliding black holes, essentially all information about these black holes are included, encoded in the gravitational waveform. We can extract as much information as we want, limited by the noise. We were also lucky because, for example, in the just looking at the first three observing runs by LIGO and Virgo, we've discovered new types of sources every time. First, we found binary black hole mergers in the first observing run, then a binary neutron star merger in the second run, and in the third run, we've discovered things that are even more complicated or interesting: black holes merging with other things that are difficult to decipher at this point. There are lots of interesting other discoveries I will mention, but interestingly, for many of these events, the astrophysical mechanism that produces them is not clear at this point. So there are lots of open questions. We answer questions, we have more discoveries, but essentially at this point, the number of questions is still growing very quickly, I would say. So I think it's a good field as a scientist to be in at the moment. Let me show you this image, which is somewhat outdated because we have so many detections that it's hard to show all of them on one slide. But basically, the latest results we have are from the third observing run that finished about a year ago at this point. Not all the events are published yet. We are still working through some of them. There was a very quick growth of the number of events. The numbers I show here, we have basically three discoveries in the first observing run, then seven in the second, and the third one, we have something like 60. Again, some of them are not published yet, so more are to come. In this third run, we had many more black hole mergers detected than previously, so we can now constrain or probe this formation scenario, how black holes are forming, much more than what we had before. Interestingly, after the first multi-messenger discovery in 02 of a neutron star merger, we had a second neutron star merger in 03, but this one, unfortunately, this time did not come with a detectable electromagnetic counterpart. And also, we had other kinds of events that I will mention. For example, there's a particular object that is in the so-called lower mass gap in this 2 to 5 or 3 to 5 solar mass range, where we don't expect stars to produce black holes or other objects. Also, what I will mention as well, there is a upper so-called mass gap where it's difficult to form black holes from stellar evolution. With all this information, with all these exciting new detections, the origin of black holes, as I said, is still not clear. There is still, you know, very basic questions about this that we're trying to figure out. So what are the options? What can actually produce a binary black hole system that merges in the universe? There are different options. I will mention, I would say, the main ones here that can be considered. It's not a complete list at this point. So starting with the, I would say, standard scenario that we've considered the longest time, which is binary stellar systems. Massive stars, the biggest stars, almost always reside in binaries. So it's natural that when they collapse into, the heaviest ones collapse into black holes, they remain, at least many of them could remain in a binary black hole system that eventually merges, and we can detect them as a binary black hole system. So this is something that is reasonably well understood as a possibility, although there are interesting questions here as well, such as how the stars evolve together as opposed to individually. That's better understood. A second option is basically what we find in galactic centers, galactic nuclei, where a large number of stellar mass black holes like to congregate around the central supermassive black holes. These black holes move there through mass segregation. Heavier objects move in, lighter objects are kicked further out. And this can form such a dense environment where potentially tens of thousands of stellar mass black holes are found within the inner parsec around the central supermassive black hole. Some of them just by chance will get close enough that they merge, they form a binary and they merge, making a detectable a binary merger for LIGO-Virgo. There are more exotic possibilities, which are not confirmed yet at this point. Basically, the early universe could also produce black holes that could form binaries through their evolution and eventually merge. There are studies to connect this to some, at least, of dark matter that is out there. Again, this is at this point more speculative than concrete. And finally, I would like to come to what I will try to focus on primarily, although I will mention other possibilities as well, which is basically what we find in galactic centers that I mentioned in a special case where we don't just have the supermassive black hole and the smaller black holes that congregate around it, but we also have a accretion disk that basically brings gas to the center. A few percent of galaxies have such an accretion disk in the center. And it turns out that this accretion disk can actually interact with the black holes that reside in the center. Basically, the black holes that orbit the center will cross this disk periodically. That will reduce their momentum perpendicular to the disk plane. And some of them will eventually move into this plane. Once in the plane, these black holes can migrate inwards within the disk, basically collecting. So the system will basically collect black holes in a smaller volume, first by moving them into the disk and then moving them closer to the center. In addition, once these black holes are in this closer environment, we have a high density black hole population. As they get close, they can actually be captured more easily and form binaries more easily due to the presence of gas, this dense gas in their surrounding, and merge over a relatively short time period compared to what we have in other environments through dynamical friction with the gas. And also in this dense environment, they can interact with the population of black holes and stars that are not in the disk necessarily, but are elsewhere. They can basically experience close encounters and basically harden in this process and merge even faster. Also, interestingly, this is not a one-time thing. Once these black holes, once two black holes merge in this AGN disk, they may not move very far from where they merged. The potential kick velocity at the beginning may not be high to kick them out of the disk too far, or they can come back in relatively quickly. And this could lead to the repeated merger of black holes, which gave the reason for the title of my talk today. This is what we call variety of hierarchical mergers, where black holes merge multiple times, which have interesting consequences. We can have heavier black holes, we can have faster spinning black holes that could be in principle indicated from what we see with LIGO. So there are different observational consequences that are special for, or there are slightly different, or somewhat different for this particular channel, black hole mergers with NHN disks than what we have in some of the other channels. For example, we can expect heavier black holes. I'll mention this in a second, but basically one of the reasons for this is the possibility of multiple mergers. Higher spin is also a possibility, which I'll mention in a second. And interestingly, which is something that is at this point less understood, but since these black holes merge in a dense environment, we have a chance of having these black holes interact with the gas around them, potentially leading to a multi-messenger counterpart for this merger or for the binary itself, which is something that's interesting. I'll mention also eccentricity as a possible signature that is that could be enhanced in this particular scenario. And also, once we have some of these detections and once we can localize them sufficiently well with gravitational wave detections, just correlation with the galaxies which they reside in could actually indicate an AGN origin as opposed to some other origin. So there are lots of interesting possible ways how we can indicate this channel observationally. I mentioned that for the heavier mass, there are multiple reasons. First of all, mass segregation in galactic centers that brings the black holes in will preferentially move heavier black holes closer to the center. And so those that will move into the AGN disk will be heavier on average than the ones that are born elsewhere in the galaxy. So this by itself will create a heavier distribution of black holes in the galactic center and in the AGN disk than what we have initially when black holes are formed. This possibility of hierarchical mergers, multiple black holes merging consecutively in the disk, is also something that can significantly increase potentially the masses of the black holes that we are detecting. And also, because we are in this dense environment, accretion can also play a role. In principle, we can end up with black holes that accrete some part of their mass. This is something that's potentially the most interesting for the lowest mass black holes. For heavier black holes, this will not appreciably change their masses. These, especially the latter two possibilities that I mentioned, will also affect the spins of these black holes. So not just the masses, but the spins as well. For example, if we merge two black holes, the resulting remnant black hole will have a high spin of 0.7 dimensionless spin, roughly, or accretion can also increase the spin as well. So basically, we can, in principle, expect higher spin for black holes that reside in AGN disks than what we have elsewhere. So this is great, right? So we have these different information that we can use. And in general, there is a lot of information we can extract, as I mentioned, from gravitational wave detections. A black hole merger, for example, can be described with 15 parameters. In principle, we can constrain all of these 15 parameters with detections. And in general, when we want to differentiate between the models that we have, the different formation scenarios, the more information we include in these comparisons, the better. The problem is, or the difficulty is, that not all this information is equally accessible. There are some that are much more easy to reconstruct from gravitational wave detection. Some of them are much harder. Basically, masses, as I showed in this little sketchier, masses are the easiest to reconstruct in general, in particular some combination of the masses, chirp mass for lower mass binaries and the total mass for heavier binaries. Then spin, especially particular combinations of spins of the two black holes that we can reconstruct better, although not as well as masses. And then there are other properties that are more difficult, for example, eccentricity that I'll briefly mention in a second. In addition, so besides just the reconstruction, some of these properties can also actually affect how far we can detect these objects. So there is a selection effect because of these properties. For example, if black holes have anti-aligned spins with the binary orbits, this is going to produce weaker gravitational waves, and we will just have a smaller population of black holes we can detect. The same is true for precessing spins for other reasons, or eccentricity, which can also reduce the strength of the gravitational wave. So these will be preferentially not selected, essentially, in the detective number of mergers that we have. So this has to be taken into account in these. When we want to compare different models or want to understand, again, the question of origin, we can use different ways to look at this. We can look at the population of mergers. So not just looking at individual events, but overall distributions of, for example, mass and spin. We can also look at special events if the properties of these events are very distinct or very unique for some particular channel, or there could be some smoking guns in some ways. For example, if we did detect an electromagnetic counterpart for one of these black hole mergers, which is, I would say, high confidence, then this would be a smoking gun that could severely restrict the possibilities. I will not have time to go into this too much today, but this is an interesting question by itself. So let's look at the masses that we've had so far. I'm showing here some results of the latest LIGO-Virgo population study paper. First, let's look at the mass distribution we found for these black hole mergers that we had. So first of all, what became clear from these many detections so far is that a single power law distribution with some cutoffs at the low end, high ends is not sufficient. There is more structure to the distribution, which is interesting by itself. In particular, for example, at high masses, it's difficult to see a cutoff, which we at least partly expected from stellar evolution models. There could be, as you see, an overabundance of black holes around 40 solar masses. This is also something that's an interesting question by itself. But beyond this, it's difficult. This is not sufficient at this point. It's hard to say at this point anything about the different channels from just this mass distribution. Spins, actually, to some extent, is more interesting what we have so far. So first of all, we have significant spins for some events. Here, the two spin values I'm quoting are the so-called effective spin, which is basically the total spin of the two black holes in a binary that is parallel to the orbital axis. This is the easiest or the best reconstructed from gravitational wave detections. And first of all, we see that some of the mergers that we have actually have significant spins, again, parallel with the orbital axis. But to some extent, even more interestingly or surprisingly, we find that about a third of the binary mergers, black hole mergers, have, statistically speaking, not individually identified, but statistically speaking, have a chi effective, effective spin that is less than zero. This is surprising because in a standard stellar evolution model where we have a stellar binary, we would expect all the spins, the orbital and the black hole spin to be aligned and not anti-aligned. So this is somewhat difficult to explain with the sort of standard channel that we have for the formation. Also, there is a significant number of events where the spins that we find have a component that is perpendicular to the orbital axis. This is also something that is a little more difficult to explain just with a standard double star system. So this is also indicative, potentially or most likely, with a chance encounter at some point to the black holes. Nothing conclusive, but again, this is something that is at least wasn't expected necessarily. So this isolated stellar binary model is difficult. There are interesting directions how this could be reconciled, but it's becoming more difficult. However, all these properties, the non-zero spins and the parallel and perpendicular directions are more in line, I would say, with what we would expect in a case where the black holes meet by chance, either in a galactic center, in a globular cluster, or are captured in an AGN disk. Okay, so we will see as more data comes, but this is again already something that is not what we necessarily expected beforehand overall. So let me show you just one particular comparison of these distributions with what we expect with from an AGN channel. What we can do, we can simulate what black holes, what black hole masses we expect to be merging in an AGN disk, and this will be affected by a variety of processes. Again, what mass segregation brings to the galactic center, how black holes are selected, which black hole will align its orbit with the AGN disk, and then how multiple mergers, hierarchical mergers, are possibly happening in a galactic center. If we simulate this process with relatively standard assumptions about, for example, the initial mass distribution for the black holes, what we find is that the high mass distribution of the black holes for the AGN channel is very much consistent with the high mass distribution that we find reconstructed from the LIGO-Virgo merger. So basically, here, if you look at, say, the left top plot A, this is the CHIRP mass distribution. CHIRP mass is the combination of the two masses of the binary, the blue line is the chirp mass distribution we reconstruct from the LIGO Virgo detections, and the red line is what we expect for the AGN channel. The top distributions, or so this A, is what we detect, and the bottom one is what is merging. So the merging is to some extent irrelevant, because what we need to compare is what we are detecting, if you will. And there we see that there is this interesting sort of consistency at these higher masses. Also, interestingly, what we see from this plot here is that while this higher part is very much in line with what we are detecting, AGNs should not contribute meaningfully if we constrain the rate of AGN assisted mergers to this higher mass part. AGNs should not contribute meaningfully to most of the lower mass black hole mergers that LIGO and Virgo are detecting. What this means is that if we looked at the distributions in this mass range, what we would find is essentially what remains if we take the AGN mergers apart. Much more needs to be done here. It's just an interesting direction that we can compare different parts of the mass distribution between observations and models of, for example, the AGN channel. If we accept this result, if we say that, again, we basically tune the merger rate, not the other parameters of the model, but the merger rate to what we detect at the highest masses, then we find that about 25% of LIGO-Virgo detections should be coming from AGN-assisted mergers. A much smaller fraction of the merger rate should be coming, because the heaviest black hole mergers are much more easy to detect with gravitational waves. Okay, so the conclusion, if you accept this plot, is that the merger rates of in AGN disk is something like 3 per cubic gigaparsec per year. So it's not a very large fraction of the LIGO-Virgo reconstructed merger rate. However, the detected event rate, because these are heavier typically, should be a higher fraction, potentially something like 25%.
So
sure. It's, yeah, sorry. Yes, please, at any time.
Yeah, so this red line, so I mean, this AGM mass distribution, how robust is this prediction? You know, this depends on, I mean, for example, disk model or the standard distribution near the supermassive black hole and this kind of thing. How robust is this red line?
Yes, excellent question, Juan. So shaded region is the statistical uncertainty, not the model uncertainty. In order to have an understanding roughly, so we didn't quantify this at this point, but in order to understand this qualitatively, how much the parameters matter, we made this comparison to what you see as a yellow. It's a weird color. It's a yellow line here, which is a it has reasonably different assumptions for several of the key parameters of the AGN assisted merger process, and you see that they are not identical at all. They are not, especially the high masses, they are also not extremely different. I don't want to claim that the uncertainty is what we see as the difference between these two. So these have to be understood better, maybe what I want to emphasize here is that the parameters we used for either of these simulations were all selected before we saw this plot. So they were all reasonable parameters. There's uncertainties and this has to be understood better. A next step that we are looking into is whether we can turn this question around, and you can say that, okay, if this is what we are seeing, what does that mean? How does that constrain the AGN parameters, for example? Okay, but just to give you one example, slightly different AGN disk model was used for the two models that you see here. Doesn't seem to make a big difference.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, very good question. Yeah, anytime.
Sorry, can I ask another question?
Yeah, of course.
I noticed your model is almost peaking for M1, like in the upper mass gap. So what's different about these black holes here, about these primary black holes here, compared to other channels? So why do you get so many heavy black holes in the upper mass gap?
Yeah, Daniel, thank you. It's an excellent question. And the main reason is hierarchical mergers. The main reason is that a meaningful fraction of the black holes will merge multiple times. So basically, when two black holes merge in the AGN disk, they will not move very far from where they are. And even if they are kicked out slightly from the disk itself, they will move back in through the same process reasonably quickly. They are not going to move that far. The escape velocity at the, you know, in the center near the central black hole is much higher than what you will typically have from these mergers. So most of them will just stay where they are or nearby, and they are going to be waiting for the next black hole to be brought there by the AGN disk. So this is the main factor. Let me mention that accretion-wise, there are uncertainties how much black holes will accrete in this environment. We find for, I would say, typical models that that should not contribute meaningfully or a lot, especially at these high masses. So the main reason why we move above the or into the mass gap is the possibility of hierarchical mergers. Okay, but you know the peak here, what you see here, Dan, actually, so I'm sorry, let me give you a second answer, because if you look at the bottom plot here, the merger rate, right, there's no peak there, right? There is this nice, more continuous distribution. Okay, so the peak that you mentioned, which is exactly at the mass gap, is not that, it's the sensitivity of LIGO. Okay, so this is sort of a fortunate or unfortunate thing, depending on your perspective. LIGO is the most sensitive to these masses, simply. So 50 to 75 solar masses or so. At lower masses, right, you just emit less energy through gravitational waves, and higher masses, much higher masses, especially, you move out of the sensitive frequency band. Okay, very good. Anyway, very good question. I'm happy to answer anything that comes along. So let me move on in the interest of time and focusing actually. So with these questions also in mind, focusing on the highest mass part, I would say the most interesting event, especially in this part of the mass distribution, is the binary black hole merger called GW190521, which was the heaviest binary we've detected so far. This was published last year, basically year after we've discovered this. And the main reason was that it was difficult to understand. It was very different from what we were preparing for or were looking for originally for many reasons. And one of the reasons was the mass. Again, this was heavier than any of the other black hole mergers we've detected. The first heavier black hole in the binary is effectively guaranteed to be heavier than 65 solar masses. 65 solar masses is what we considered as the highest possible mass that starts the mass gap. So the mass gap where stars may not be able to produce black holes starts somewhere around 50 solar masses, potentially as high as 65. This mass range, basically, if we consider this ruled out by stellar evolution models, is where this black hole resides. It has to be heavier than 65 solar masses. Let me mention a disclaimer here, which is that especially since this discovery, there has been a lot of interesting studies of stellar evolution, and so there are questions that have to be answered. Nevertheless, it is not easy to explain through stellar evolution a black hole of this mass. Now, this is one of the aspects. Other aspects are also. Oh, sorry. Yes.
Yeah. Can I ask you a quick question? What prior do you assume when you compute these posteriors?
I think this is a uniform prior. This is the standard LIGO-Virgo study on this.
Right. So if one had an informative population prior, there is some non-zero probability, right, that the object is below 65. Like, you have that in your table. So if you had
So. We can definitely play around with the priors for the LIGO-Virgo paper. This was one particular prior, and really this is a good point that actually there has been a lot of, so you know, one direction, right, everybody wants to understand this event, and one direction was to see what the population priors can do and whether we can explain this. And there was research, I'm not sure if maybe you also did some research on this as well. We did some research on the detection side, and what we find is that it's difficult to find this high mass. Basically, the study I've been involved in looked at the frequency of this event, the the peak frequency of this event. And with that, it's hard to have a sort of coincidence of things that produces this low frequency peak with a lower mass event. Okay, but I think the point, the takeaway is that there are interesting studies here to see if there is a way around this. Okay, so all these numbers need to be studied. It seems that it's unlikely. It's very unlikely that this is a low mass event, which may be inconsistent with stellar evolution. There are caveats with the prior, with the stellar evolution models we have. Nevertheless, this by itself is, you know, if you had to put money on what produced this event, it seems that this is not the standard stellar process. Okay. I don't know if you want to put money on this, but this is where things point. But if mass was not enough, and again, there are these uncertainties, the other properties of this event are also special. So it's not just that we have everything like for the other events and we have a high mass, but also the spin of this event in particular is very different from what we had in other events. It seems that this this black hole merger has a high so-called misaligned spin, which basically means that the orbital axis and the spin axis are highly misaligned, potentially as much as 90 degrees. So there is a large perpendicular spin for at least one of the black holes compared to the orbital axis. This is also, again, unusual. This is not the typical thing that we see, even though there are large uncertainties. So just to be more specific with the numbers that I have here, right? So you see that the primary and secondary spin magnitudes for these events that we reconstruct peak around this 0.7, but you see that the uncertainties are reasonably large. Nevertheless, this is inconsistent with zero spins. There is a base factor for this. So the prior also matters here to some extent. But again, this is, if you had to bet, it's highly likely that there is a high misaligned spin for this event as well. And this is also something that is pointing towards a dynamical origin, which basically means chance encounter, either in an AGN disk or in some other environment with many black holes. Again, not a proof, but an indication in one direction. Besides the misalignment, the high spin itself, that this black hole likely has a high spin, is also something interesting. This is the highest expected spin, again, with uncertainties that we find. Again, no proof, but this is also property that is consistent with what we expect if black holes emerged previously. Previous mergers increase the black hole spins, and if both of the black holes that are in this binary have formed in a previous encounter, then they should both have relatively high spins. Again, the spin is typically around 0.7. I don't claim that the 0.7 we find here with these large uncertainties is 0.7 because of that, but it's interesting that both predict a high spin. So again, no proof, but in principle, this is all pointing in the direction of a possible AGN or dynamical origin. Now, how can we test this further? There are different possibilities, of course, with one event. This is how far we can go. But for example, if we had an electromagnetic counterpart for an event like this, this would severely limit what the possibilities are. Or even if we have, for example, orbital eccentricity, this is something that would be in some ways, a smoking gun of an origin, which is basically makes it mean that the black holes are either formed very recently or possibly they are close to a supermassive black hole. Okay, but it would severely limit many of the other possibilities. And it turns out that we have some indication, at least, for this particular event being highly eccentric. Eccentricity in general is difficult to probe, and the reason is that it increases the parameter space that we have significantly, and it's difficult to generate a waveform from, at least analytically, which is often what we do because of the large dynamical range. In some cases, the black holes move very quickly when they are at the barycenter, and in some cases, they move very slowly when they are farther apart. This is difficult to simulate. So this is something that we had been struggling with, and there hadn't been good ways to test this, especially for the high eccentricity case. For low eccentricity, this is getting better. In order to mitigate this problem, we carried out more than 300 numerical relativity simulations of a wide range of eccentricities. This corresponds, so 300 roughly corresponds to a template bank of 30,000, because basically the masses can be changed without changing the, so basically you just stretch the waveform if you want a different mass. So this is a not a super large, not as large as we typically have for LIGO, but a reasonably large template that now we have. And with this, we find that the highest, the best match between the detected gravitational waveform and these different simulations corresponds to a highly eccentric binary with an eccentricity of roughly 0.7 with uncertainties, of course. So this is not a a very precise measurement. Nevertheless, this is an interesting indication basically the same thing, that this could be a dynamically formed binary. It turns out that if we look at the AGN channel in particular, because black holes, many of the black holes here move in close to 2D plane. So basically the galactic center and the AGN disk in particular will create an anisotropic distribution for the black holes. If we consider these anisotropic interactions between the black holes, basically 2D interactions, these interactions are much more likely to increase the eccentricity of a binary and result in a merger that's highly eccentric than if we have encounters that we expect in some other environments where the interactions are 3D or isotropic. So this is an interesting sort of added piece of information that the sort of limiting the or making the distribution of black holes anisotropic is also something that we expect to lead to more eccentric mergers in general.
One quick question. Sorry if you already said this, but when you're quoting these eccentricities, what's the reference frequency that you're quoting the eccentricity at?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. So the reference frequency is an easy thing to consider for the lower eccentricity regime. So where you have a low eccentricity binary or especially a low mass binary, then what we typically consider is 10 hertz. So we define eccentricity where the binary reaches a period of 10 hertz. When you go to high eccentricities, and or high masses, this becomes difficult because basically you don't have any cycles. So if you have, for example, a 0.7 eccentricity, where the waveform reaches the 10 hertz, you don't have a single cycle. You have something much smaller than a cycle. So simply the definition of eccentricity at 10 hertz becomes more complicated. The way we define these particular eccentricities is if the binary was 50 solar masses, the black holes were 50 solar masses, they would have this eccentricity at 10 hertz. Okay, so this is slightly different because the masses we reconstruct here are higher. Nevertheless, this is not expected to make a big difference because you are not circling many times. You're not basically changing the eccentricity meaningfully.
Perfect. So, do you expect to have these kinds of events forming in AGNs where you had this like very high eccentricity of merger, or like any what kind of fraction of events would have that?
That's an excellent question, and we have these distributions in this particular paper by Johan Samsing. I'm trying to remember, but I think it's something reasonable, like or significant, like maybe 10% of the eccentric events will have high eccentricity. So there is a I don't want to say a very wrong number, but it is something that is much more than a percent.
Can I just follow up quickly, please?
Sure.
So when you say that the 0.7 eccentricity is the best fit, is it a much better fit than low eccentricity templates? What I'm worried about is it's a very short signal. So how good a measurement is the eccentricity measurement in that context?
Yeah, that's a good question. So basically what we find, and here on the right top, I show this distribution of the y-axis here is the likelihood, log likelihood that we find for different simulations, and the x-axis is eccentricity, and there are different color codes here. Basically, if we consider all our simulations, then we find a fairly large difference between the best matched zero eccentricity signal, which is has a log likelihood of something like 103 here for these numbers. These numbers are, there's an arbitrary shift here. So just the absolute value doesn't matter, just the relative value. And the best match we have here around this point this is not 0.7 exactly, but yeah, sorry, 0.7, it's something like 108. So that's a very large difference, a base factor of 100 or so. In order to basically account for the limitation of our limited template bank, or to understand whether this limitation is could be the reason for this, we also made a similar comparison to the basically the complete template bank that LIGO and Virgo used, which is a 300,000 templates or so that were used in the parameter reconstruction of this event in the official LIGO Virgo paper. And with this, this is the best of what can be done at zero eccentricity, because all other parameters are accounted for. And with this, we find a base factor of something like, so basically, it's not, the plot doesn't show the latest result, we find a base factor of 20. So it's not, it's not a five sigma discovery, but it's a reasonably strong indication. More studies has to be done, but it's interestingly pointing in this direction.
Okay, thanks.
So it's, a base factor of 20 is depends on your preferences to some extent. But I would say that it's definitely interesting. And again, we're trying to improve this or increase this template bank to have an even better match. So basically, if we increase the template bank, if we create more numerical relativity simulations, the best match at zero eccentricity cannot possibly improve, because we've already covered the whole parameter space there, while more simulations at other eccentricities can improve, because there we have a relatively limited coverage. So this base factor 20 is in some ways a lower limit of the difference. I don't want to claim that this, this is a proof of anything. In my sort of take, these individual, not necessarily guaranteed, but promising pieces of information like the high mass, the perpendicular spin, the high spin, and the eccentricity are sort of painting a particular picture, and we have to treat them together as much as possible. Okay, yeah, excellent questions, thank you. So let me move on to another event. I want to finish in a few minutes, but another very interesting event where I would say we've learned something we did not necessarily expect was a binary merger, where a relatively massive black hole of 23 solar masses merged with an object that is in the so-called lower mass gap. It was 2.6 solar mass object. This object is heavier than any of the neutron stars we've found, or actually heavier than where we expect the neutron star mass distribution to reside. Not considering the possibility of very high spinning neutron stars. And it is lower than where we expect stars to produce black holes, which starts potentially around five solar masses based on what we see in the galaxy and what simulations show. So this this lower mass gap object is something that we don't fully understand at this point. It is not possible from the data to easily differentiate between this being a neutron star, or this being a very heavy neutron star for some reason, or this being a black hole. Nevertheless, this is something, again, that was unexpected. Now, assuming that stars don't meaningfully create, so some stars actually could create such an event, and actually you guys may have seen this this discovery by assassin of an object that is in this mass range. So it's not something that is ruled out. However, our expectation is that the number of these objects, the 2 to 5 solar mass objects produced by stars, should be very low and should not appear at the rate that's what's consistent with this observation by LIGO. So assuming that this is not from a star dying and producing this event, what can create an object that is in this mass range? Well, there are two possibilities. One of them is there could be, so basically something smaller had to form and then had to become heavier. How can this happen? You either have accretion, a lot of accretion from a smaller, lower mass neutron star, or you could have two neutron stars, or a neutron star and something else merging and forming a heavier object. Interestingly, and to me, there's no proof here either, but to me, the most sort of telling piece of information here is that this mass is basically exactly twice the mass of the neutron stars we see in the Milky Way in binary neutron star systems, right? So we have this 1.33 with a relatively narrow distribution for galactic binary neutron stars. So this mass is pretty much what we expect if these neutron stars merge. Okay, so this is, again, we can't tell for sure, but this is pointing in the direction, at least to some extent. So accretion is possible, but it's not necessary. We can explain it just with something that I would say consider the simplest explanation, which is two neutron stars merging. If this is the case, the complication is the heavier companion, and in particular that we have a very heavy companion, typically, especially for stellar binaries, we expect reasonably close masses for the two objects that are formed. So this is something that we typically not expect. Now, how can this possibly be explained? Well, one explanation, one possibility, is that we have an environment where many of these mergers happen in close proximity, and we have basically a hierarchical merger where we had two neutron stars merge and then undergo a chance encounter with the heavier black hole. So this is one possibility. Let me also mention that another interesting possibility proposed by Liu and others at Caltech is that if we have a binary stellar system or a binary forming system, basically a large gas cloud, it can happen that we don't end up forming two massive stars, but basically one of the gas clouds forms not one, but two objects. And they estimate that if this one gas cloud forms a star that will become a 23 solar mass black hole, if we take that mass to two pieces, you will end up with two neutron stars. So that in principle, such a formation of a triple system is also consistent with this picture. So the jury is still out there. Nevertheless, this is something that we had not expected before. And will be interesting to see if there are other events like this as well. But standard binary stellar evolution is difficult to reconcile with this picture here. So what's next? Let me try to wrap up reasonably quickly. So basically, we already have these 60 or so detections, and more publications are coming. Not everything is out there yet. This is already giving us a lot of information. There are also, as I mentioned at the beginning, many open questions. And in some ways, there are more open questions now than there were before our current observing run. This picture is not just going to continue the same way, but there is an exponential growth in some ways in the number of detections that we are expecting. So basically in the next 5 years or so, we may have something like 1,000 more detections by LIGO, Virgo, Kagra, and potentially LIGO India at that time, based on what is already funded for the detectors. So this is not something that we hope to achieve, but basically we have a reasonably firm timeline for how these developments will happen. So this will be interesting because we will have more information, we will have more discoveries, so there could be more special events, but also because of the increased sensitivity, we will have the events that are nearby especially will be constrained at a much higher precision. So basically we will be able to constrain their properties more precisely, hopefully, which will also help again in the next 5 years. And just to summarize, so basically our last observing run with LIGO and Virgo delivered a lot more information than what we had previously. Some of this information we achieved for the populations of events we saw is difficult to reconcile with the standard isolated binary paradigm that we were primarily working with. Although again, there are lots of interesting open questions. Just to remind you, one of them is that a large fraction of the binary black hole systems are expected to have a negative chi effective, which means a misaligned spin with the or anti-aligned spin with the binary orbits, not expected from this standard channel. We have quite a few binaries at this point that have spins that are misaligned. So basically, some of the component is perpendicular to the orbital axis. We have objects that are in this lower and upper mass gap where we do not expect events easily from stellar evolution, we have strange mesh ratios, potentially a high eccentric binary. And there had been claims, I didn't mention this, but there had been claims, even though it's not far from guaranteed and questioned, but there had been claims of some electromagnetic counterparts that were discovered or indicated, at least. It's far from discovery at this point. So I would say that in terms of comparison to the standard isolated binary paradigm, we have these interesting information that, again, are difficult to reconcile at this point with this model. It's more difficult to differentiate between the more dynamical models. For example, if we consider galactic centers where there are lots of black holes, or AGNs in particular, there is more similarity here. So this will require more study. So this is somewhat harder. One indication, if there is indeed binaries that are eccentric, it seems that we expect more eccentric binaries from AGN than from other dynamical channels. And of course, if we have a more confident electromagnetic counterpart detection, that could be a smoking gun as well. And there are many things that, are open questions that hopefully we can answer in the near future. These include, for example, if there are other even more massive black holes than what we saw in GW1905-21. I think this could make it even more clear what may be going on here. So we'll see in the next observing run. If we have more indication of eccentricity, that could also be interesting. Again, this is something that is difficult to find at this point. At heavier masses, it may be easier. We'll see if this is a one-time thing, or if we can find such indication elsewhere as well. And again, if we have this particular event where two neutron stars merge and then merge with another black hole, if we see more of these events, then if we see them with the exact same mass, 2.6 lower masses, that means one thing. And if we have some other distribution in the lower mass gap, that will mean a completely different thing. So more detections will, especially these particular detections, will give us a lot of information of what may be the origin of these events. And let me stop here. Thank you very much for your attention.
Great. Thank you, Imre, for the very nice talk. Any additional questions?
Oh, hi.
Yes. Yeah.
Hi, Imre. How are you doing? Thanks for the talk.
Very good.
Question. So how much you indicated us, like, in AGNs, accretion can bring the spin up. So are there estimates of how much can you change the spin?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Luis. So basically, it can go higher than this 0.7 that you have from two black hole mergers. There is going to be a distribution, but I would say that it's not going to be much higher. So this will not grow, to any number. The reason is that there's not just the increase of spins when two black holes merge, but basically the spins are somewhat disoriented after each merger due to different things, primarily the interaction with other black holes and stars near the galactic center. So basically what you can imagine is that there could be some correlation between the binary plane and the spin direction, but more likely there's going to be reasonably small correlation. So basically, the most likely thing is after the second merger, you will slightly decrease, actually, the overall spin and not increase. So there's going to be distribution, of course. So there's going to be a spread in what values you can have. And you can, in principle, have significantly higher than 0.7, but it's not going to be the main thing. So typically, you will actually lower the spin for multiple mergers.
Perfect. Thank you.
OK, I see Jen raised his hand.
In the AGN channel, what's the merger rate of GW1708-14 like events?
1708-14.
The 2.6 plus 23.
Oh, right. That's a good point that I didn't mention. So it's not so basically for anything in that mass range, it can be a somewhat different mass because of accretion, which I'm showing here. But basically, anything in this mass range below five solar masses, I would say, and black holes, the rate will be reasonably low, so that this is possible. So it's not, you cannot say that this is impossible from the LIGO Virgo detections, but it's not going to be very typical. So you will have many more black hole mergers detected and even just merging from actually detected from AGNs than what you are detecting. My recollection is that the rate is actually comparable to the black hole merger rate, but because of the masses, you will have many more black hole merger detections. So basically, just to put it differently, for example, for neutron star mergers, and one of the things that we looked at in this particular paper was one of the neutron star mergers that also had a strange mass that LIGO detected. There we found that the mass itself would be okay with respect to the AGN channel. You can increase the mass of neutron stars with accretion in the AGN disk. But there we found that the rate of neutron star mergers within the disk is going to be very low. So you will not have, you know, it's very unlikely that you will have an actual detection from AGNs with LIGO. Here, this is not a fact that rules out as a merger in an AGN disk, but it's not going to be the typical thing you see.
Sorry, so if I understand correctly, so you are saying if you want to make the AGN channel the rate compatible with the infer rate from 1908-14, then you get many more massive black hole mergers, the rate will be higher than what LIGO measures so far?
No, what I said is basically I think the rate we expect is something like, the detection rate is roughly 1% of the overall detection rate from AGNs. Okay, so 1% of the events you detect will have a black hole merging with something below 5 solar masses. Mm-hmm. So if all LIGO detections were from AGNs, then you would expect one such event detected, right? Not everything will be from AGNs, most likely, unfortunately or fortunately. So you expect less, okay? But it's not something that rules out this event as an AGN origin, okay? It's not supporting it either, for sure.
Okay, thanks. Daniel, you have a question?
Yeah, thanks, Emre, for the great talk. Long time no see. I still have a follow-up question on the earlier one. I'm still intrigued by your mass distribution for the primary masses in the AGN channel. And so you mentioned that that's due because of the secondary mergers and hierarchical mergers and so on. But so I was wondering, so how does it exactly differ from other dynamical environments? So is there something special here that pushes it even to higher primary masses than, for example, in other dynamical environments?
Yeah, that's a great question, Daniel. And so there's two factors here. The first is that it's an important point that dynamical or hierarchical mergers can happen elsewhere as well. And this is something that is actively studied at this point. The reason these distributions may differ is that for a typical dynamical environment, if you have a higher mass, you increase the chance of a second merger to some extent, but it's not going to be a large factor. Okay, so basically, the chance of merging three or four times is getting reasonably small in other channels because you're working with small numbers for each merger. Here, if you accept, I would say that the black hole stays within the AGN disk or nearby and is waiting for the next victim, then this chance increases quite a bit. So you can have a higher fraction of higher generation mergers than what you typically expect from other channels. But with that said, I would say that you still can have such things in other environments. And of course, another thing that works here in favor of other channels is that if you have a galactic center, then you can have these mergers for billions of years, right? So you can accumulate mass over a long time. Well, for an AGN disk, you live for something like 10 to 100 million years. So this all has to happen within that time frame. So there are different factors here. And so in principle, other sites can also have multiple generations of mergers and produce these heavy masses. I would say that here, because everything is collected in this very small environment, it's an extra layer of condensing the black holes, essentially, which may end up with this higher masses, again, depending on how long the AGN lives and how strong this collection is. So there are different factors, but in principle, this could end up with producing even higher mass black holes. But I'm not claiming to rule out other dynamical channels here in any way. Okay, so the comparison here, what we try to understand is the comparison between this particular channel and the reconstructed distribution. Okay, so the claim here is that the high mass distribution is consistent with the AGN channel, and the distribution at low masses is also consistent because it's not constrained at all by the LIGO distribution. It's too small. Okay, that's the claim here, and I wouldn't want to claim that other channels, other dynamical channels, are ruled out for the high mass part.
Okay, I see Ahmed. Sorry, I see Ahmed has a question.
Yeah. Hi, thank you, Dr. Emery, for a great talk. I had one question. In your talk, you focused on GW190521 for the higher mass primary black holes, and then like more observations from the O4 run might also constrain many of the variables. But like there are a few more observations in the O3 catalog itself of higher mass black holes, maybe lying in the upper mass gap also. So do those detections help you constrain some of these mass distribution merger rate and other parameters?
Aman, that's a very good question. And basically, I would say there are two parts here. The first is that what you see here is using just that. So here for this distribution match, if you will, we used multiple of these heavy black holes. So for the population, we definitely want to incorporate everything that's heavy mass here. And as you point out, there are multiple events like that. I think we work with something like six events in this mass range. And again, that's the published distribution. The reason I focus then particularly on this one is that this is a reasonably clear case as an individual event, because all these special things are easier to differentiate models with. Okay. If you go to the other events that are, probably or even likely above this mass gap limit, the uncertainties grow quite a bit. Okay. So the special thing about this event was that the uncertainties for example, being below 65 solar masses were really small. Okay. For the other events, you can make statistical statements, but it's hard to make statements on individual events. Okay, but we definitely, for population studies, we definitely want to use all the information we have.
Okay, thank you.
Jen, I see your hands are still raised. Do you still have a question or?
No.
Okay, maybe I'll ask one more question. So if the black hole gets captured by the disk, how long does it take for the spin to be aligned with the disk? I mean, if the time scale is short, then you expect this binary form in the disk to have aligned spin, right?
That's an excellent question. And interestingly enough, it's not clear. So there are estimates that this can happen within the time frame, within the lifetime of the AGN disk. The reason it's not going to matter that much, in my opinion, that there are uncertainties here. The reason it's not going to matter that much is that the main reason it seems that these black holes will be merging is because they will be interacting with the other objects that are not in the AGN disk. So imagine that two black holes form a binary, or there's just one black hole that's migrating inwards. Basically, they will migrate into the part of the galactic center where they will experience very frequent close encounters with other objects in the galactic center. So the closer you move to the center, the faster, the more frequent these close encounters will be. And those close encounters will mess up your alignment, essentially. Okay, so even if you were to align in the AGN lifetime, if you were left alone, you will not be left alone.
Okay, thanks. Any additional questions? Well, if not, let's thank Emery again for this wonderful talk. Thank you.